You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 15th of February 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live tonight at RadioAryan.com because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, the busy man, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, well, just left the video editing department.
The studio.
To come on the show. So, yeah, I've just started work on part 19. And that may even run into three parts. We will see.
All right, sounds good. It sounds good. What's the content going to be? You must have a good idea of what it's going to be talking about.
I've got every idea, yeah.
You're going to let us in on that?
Yeah, well, what it is, it's like kind of, I've had a couple of monkeys on my back for a long time, and during the this series on here and doing the videos, I managed to clear a couple off, but there's still one monkey on my back that I would like to clear off, and I'm hopeful I can do, and that this is to kill this myth of Hitler and the National Socialists being pagan and not Christian. I think every week we're getting closer and closer to that realization. That is a myth, and I started this week, believe it or not, I thought I'll go for the jugular, and that was Heinrich Himmler. We were doing a little bit on him.
Well, how many times do we have to destroy that myth that they were pagan?
Exactly.
I mean, we've made podcast after podcast showing the evidence that's there. I mean, just from their actions, you can say, well, they're Christian by their actions. You're not Christian claiming to follow something. You're Christian by your actions. Actions speak louder than words. I mean, this is something all famous Christians have said right the way throughout the last 2,000 years, that's what makes you a Christian, is the things that you do. And right at the heart of National Socialism was loving your neighbour as you love yourself, loving your nation, putting the idea of the nation first before the individual. And that is a Christian philosophy. It's right at the heart of the Christian religion. And they said National Socialism is based on Christian principles, and we promote positive Christianity. And as we've shown here, positive Christianity was a movement that had been going on for a long time. It preceded National Socialism. It was a Catholic movement. It was a Catholic movement. We're going to get more into that tonight as well. The Catholic influence and the Catholic Catholics working together basically with National Socialism, with fascism. You said there was something else that you're going to be looking at in the video as well, this idea of Jesus being a Jew.
Not being a Jew, should I say. Yeah, this is accepted by most academia and most people in general who don't really understand the history of it all. And so I'm going to venture down that road as well, which hopefully will prove successful.
Well, we've exploded that myth loads of times. Whichever way you look at it, there's no way that Jesus was a Jew. If you look at it religiously and you look at today's religious Jews, they're descended from the Pharisees. The religion, well, the Talmud was codified in the 6th century AD. So 600 years after Christ, Judaism was formed, the religion of Judaism. So he can't have been a follower of Judaism. The Jews themselves, he said that their father was the devil. So how could he be biologically a Jew when he says that the Jews' father was a devil? They're the synagogue of Satan. He says they have a different father to him. He says their father goes back to Cain, the first murderer. He's not saying his father is the devil. He's saying their father is the devil. So he can't be biologically a Jew. And the final one is, could he have been a Jewish citizen? Was he a citizen of multicultural Judea? Could he say, I'm a Judean? No, he couldn't. He was a Galilean. He came from Galilee. And the first name for the Christians was the Galileans, as in distinction to the Jews who were the Judeans. Judea at the time was a multicultural country, exactly the same as the multicultural countries that white people live in now. And it didn't matter what ethnicity you were, you could become a Jew. You could follow the Judean religion, which was basically a distorted version of the Hebrew religion, which revolved around priests, a temple, and sacrifices. And 70 years after Christ, 40 years after Christ died in AD 70, the temple was destroyed, the priests were all lost, and there was no more sacrifices. So there was no more Hebrew religion either. And he wasn't following that. He wasn't following the temple priests because Herod had already corrupted all of that, and Herod had put in all his own Canaanite co-ethnics in all the important positions in the aristocracy and in the priesthood. Again, it's exactly the same as now when we see that Jews are in all these important positions that Gentiles used to hold. Jews are now holding them. Herod did exactly the same thing. Herod was the king. Mm. He was the king, and he was of ignoble heritage. He was a Canaanite bastard. His mother was a Canaanite, and his father was a Judean, so he was mixed race. And if you're mixed race, you cannot claim to be an Israelite or one of the children of Israel. And so, no, Jesus could not have been a Jew, whichever way you look at it. And the only reason why people think that he is today is because the Jews benefit from that, because so much of the world is Christian. And if the Jews can claim some part of that, they know that they will be looked up to, and they won't be criticized. It benefits the Jews to say that Jesus was a Jew. It certainly doesn't benefit Christians. It just deceives Christians. Hitler knew that he wasn't a Jew. I mean, that was quite a large part of National Socialist ideology.
Well, Himmler actually came out with statements and said that, you know, it's not even historic truth that he's a Jew. So, and when Himmler said it, and he's the head of the SS, and he's also come out and said he'll have no criticisms of Christ at all. This guy's someone else.
Well, they said that by his actions, he was quite clearly Aryan. And I do recall reading that Himmler sent a group of people over there to Palestine to look at the bodies of that time. And he declared that, well, he can't have been like today's Jews. And I think they said he was, because of where he came from, it was a Gentile, because Galilee of the Gentiles was actually the full name of Galilee. And that was where the tribe of Benjamin were. All Christ's disciples were Benjaminites. And the bodies that they had a look at from around that time, they were all Caucasian. They were all Benjaminites. They weren't Canaanite Jews. I mean, they've got a mongrel heritage that goes back to the Neanderthals. It goes back to pre-human races. I'm not joking. When they say that there's sort of 2% of this Neanderthal DNA in Europe, that's where it is. It's in these Jews that aren't, you know, they're not indigenous to Europe. They came into Europe hundreds of years after Christ. Well, yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, I was just going to say, there's a lot of interest at the moment on the internet with the Tartarian Empire. And I looked into one of these documentaries recently, and it showed these skulls, these elongated skulls, which many believe some of the Egyptian headwear was so long at the top that they were covering these skulls up. But these skulls were found in Peru and even in Russia. So the empire stretched quite away, and There was a certain chemical in it, I forgot the name now, which you can find in a human skull. And it determines, to a scientist anyway, he can determine whether that person died before he was 30 or after 30 by testing this stuff. But in these skulls, what they found with the elongated skulls, there is none of this in it. So it's not even human.
Well, it could be a birth defect.
But that's another story.
Yeah, it could be a birth defect. I know the skulls that you're talking about, because they've suggested, oh, well, it could be aliens, they could be giants, or it could be a birth defect. And there was an Egyptian pharaoh, Akhenaten, and he had these birth defects. He's got a very strangely shaped face, but that could have just been artistic license. And he was a very strange pharaoh. He got rid of all the old gods. And he was just like one of these modern atheist liberals that gets rid of religion, wants to get rid of the priests and just brings in a materialistic way of doing things. And that was this Akhenaten. And he put up all his propaganda of what a lovely family man he was with his wife and all his kids on these friezes. And then while that was going on, he had all these children that were dying of malnourishment. They've got this big mass grave of all these children that starved. So, yeah. There are the similarities there. And when he died, they defaced all the pictures of him and smashed everything up and wrote his name out of the records, like as if he had never existed.
Yeah.
Because of
sounds
what he
about
did.
Right.
Yeah. Freud thought he was wonderful. He wrote this book.
Oh, but he did.
Yeah, he wrote a book trying to say that he was Moses.
Oh, God. Please.
Right. Well, now we've gone way off track. We were going to get.
Off, yeah.
We were going to get back into Behind the Dictators tonight, weren't we? By L.H. Lehman. This is the book that we started covering last week that basically validates all your work. And it's not coming from a friend, an ally. It's coming from a hostile witness who is basically trying to say that National Socialism was hand in glove with Catholicism, and in particular with the Jesuits. And what we got to last week, we established the links between why the Catholicism was against Freemasonry and against the French Revolution, and how they were hoping to use National Socialism and the fascist states to stamp out communism and humanism and liberalism and all these things that the traditional church were against, and the modernizing part of the church, the progressives, the liberals, the National Socialists were getting rid of them. They got rid of these liberal priests, and that's the ones that we hear about today, the so-called persecution of the church. It was them getting rid of the liberal progressive communist priests who have taken over the whole church today. So let's get into this. And again, I've pulled some quotes out from it. And the first one is on the Catholic origins of the National Socialist program. Nationalist fascism's anti-Semitic ideology, its anti-Masonic and anti-democratic activities, its propaganda methods, the hierarchical structure of its organization, and even its war program were copied from the Catholic Jesuit order. The Crusades of the Middle Ages also began with persecution of the Jews and were preceded by a purging within the church itself. Likewise, a brutal cleansing within Catholicism preceded the wars of religion in the 16th and 17th centuries. Its object was to rid Catholicism of the heretical Protestant influences which had arisen within the church's organization before and after Martin Luther's time. It is in the light of these events that National Socialism's fight with all the churches in Germany must be regarded. On the one hand, it was an attempted purge of recalcitrant elements within the Catholic Church, which had been infected with liberal and Protestant ideas during the post-war years in Germany under the Weimar Republic. On the other hand, it was a fight against Protestantism and its liberal institutions, which had been afforded still greater scope for development after the fall of the monarchy in 1918. The fight was carried out in both instances according to the traditional methods of Catholic Jesuit strategy. And we've got a quote here from a Catholic Father Hammerstein. The revolutions of 1789 and 1848, that's the French Revolution, were the result of the Reformation. And today we are faced with the choice of an alternative, either to live in a socialism during these last years of Protestant heresy, or to infect public life with the principles of Christianism, that is to say, Catholic principles. Anything else is but half measures. Close quote. Hitler himself admits that he was helped by the methods of the Jesuit Counter-Reformation to carry on his ideological war. His use of brute force against all opposing convictions and philosophical opinions is the result of the fact, as he says, that I made a rigorous analysis of analogous cases which are to be met within history, especially in the domain of religion. I remember reading about that, where he said he was impressed with the way that Christianity after the marches and with the rise of the Catholic Church, how it realized that it just needed to completely dominate. The whole of the country needed to be Christian. You couldn't have heresies. Everybody had to be part of the same church. It was very important. And I think he understood that and was applying that to the state. And we don't need to have these different parties. We just need to have one party that controls everything. And I also find this bit here interesting, Dennis, where he says about how the Crusades also began with kicking out the Jews and also kicking them out from within the church. So he's saying what the National Socialists were doing with regards to the Jews, it also has its original in things that the church were doing way back. Sure. What do you think of this then?
I mean, to me, it's absolute. Before Hitler were putting Jews in ghettos, Catholic Church put Jews in ghettos simply to protect the Christians in Europe from, you know, the degeneracy which these Jews always bring. And I can't think of one instance when the Jews have been actually picked on because of the religion. It's always been because of their activities.
Now, they like to say today, they gassed all these Jews because they didn't like their religion or because they killed Christ. And apart from the fact they didn't gas the Jews anyway, that was never an argument that was made against them. The only time their religion came up was the fact that the Talmud itself was blasphemous and it says disgusting things about Jesus Christ in it. But yeah, even the Talmud itself, I mean, they allowed them to put arguments in front of the Pope. And there was, I'm trying to think of the name, Reuchlin was one of them, and Pfefferkorn. And Pfefferkorn was a converso Jew. He was a he'd become a Christian. And he argued in front of the Pope that the Talmud was blasphemous and it should be banned. And Reuchlin was a progressive humanist Jew, and he had Gentiles on his side, Freemasons on his side, and the secret societies on his side, and he was arguing that it was just progressive, and they really need to keep the Talmud because the Christian Church can learn from the teachings of the Talmud how to interpret the Bible, and eventually they allowed the Talmud to be printed. And they started asking the Jews to help them with the interpretations of the Bible. So they never attacked them for their religion. They should have done. I mean, they certainly should have done.
It's always, these programs are always result of, political and economic disruption, which these people always bring wherever they're welcomed.
Well, one of the things they used to do, especially in Poland and Russia, was make alcohol out of the potato crop and out of the crops. They would make alcohol from it, and then they would sell the alcohol to the farmers. Farmers would spend all their money, and they'd say, well, we'll loan you the money. We'll keep you in alcohol for the rest of the year, and you just give us next year's crop. And they would do that, and then they'd have no crops. And they'd be starving, and they'd say, and the Jew would say, well, it's okay, we'll still give you the alcohol, but if you give us your house and the farmland. And they would end up they'd end up taking everything over, and the farmer would end up basically working on his own, on what was his own farm, to produce the crops for this Jew to make alcohol out of it. And they ended up taking over large areas and owning large areas of Russia and Poland. And they did, you know, it's that same way of doing things that ended up in Germany with them owning the farms in Germany, where the German farmers got poor, didn't they?
Well, unfortunately, the financial stranglehold that they have around the world today, which is completely almost the world, once they have this total stranglehold, then all they do then is squeeze the finances on all these countries until they all bend the knee. That's the plan.
And they are correct there when they say that Protestantism is, you know, it's hand in glove with Judaism. I mean, it is only the Catholic Church. Yeah. It is only the Catholic Church that stood up against them right up until the Third Reich. And it's no coincidence that it was called the Third Reich, the Third Holy Roman Empire.
Exactly.
When you go back to the Reformation and Martin Luther, these Jews were printing all these Bibles with spurious translations. They were funding Cromwell and lots of the other Protestants, and the Catholics were trying to fight against that. So they saw communism, Protestantism, Freemasonry, all as one enemy. Connection. Yeah, the same enemy to fight against. And there was a difference in Germany, because the nationalists in Germany that were Protestants, they were trying to take the Jewish side out of the church as well. So they were actually united with the Catholics. And,
well, I was just going to come to that, because in one of the documentaries I did, I think it was Communism by the Back Door. There were some, obviously, there's not many statues of Hitler and anybody from the Third Reich these days, all destroyed. And I came across these carvings in a Berlin church, which was obviously, it was in ruins, like, but these carvings were still there. And the carvings showed Adolf Hitler with German soldiers. It showed Jesus with German soldiers. And this, I found out, is a Protestant church. And this always puzzled me, because obviously there's been this rivalry between, you know, the Protestants leading with the Jews against the Catholics. But then as I researched more, I found out there was a substantial part of German Protestants wanted to rejoin the Catholic Church again, which would make sense then.
Also, they unlike the other Protestants that were sort of worshipping the Jews and looking at Martin Luther's early life, the Germans were looking at his later life, and we're seeing Martin Luther as a fantastic anti-Semite.
Oh, yeah, because the time once you found out.
Yeah, because of his book on the Jews and their lies. And they concentrated on that aspect, which brought them into line with the Catholic teaching on the Jews. So you could follow Martin Luther's later work, and you'd be completely in line with Catholic teaching on the Jews. But if you were following his earlier work, I mean, he thought they were wonderful. You know, he was going to them for help with translating the Bible. You might as well go to the devil and ask for help with it.
Well, can I just add before you continue, just for people who don't know, in the Vatican II, which was to me the announcement slow death of the Catholic Church, there was Protestants involved in rearranging the doctrines. So what are Protestants doing in that situation? Obviously doing the work of the Jews.
And Jews were involved in that as well. But there was, I mean, in this book here, that there's quotes about all of this, and it's saying, you know, Protestantism, that's just a heresy. That can never be seen as equivalent to Catholicism. And yet here we are today, and in Vatican II, they didn't just say that Protestantism was equivalent, but Buddhism, Hinduism, all religions. I mean, that's how far they've fallen just in the last century. This really was the last, you know, the last holdout against it.
Yeah, the
last battle. Well, let's have a look at the Vatican's fascist policies. The fascist policies of the Vatican can be seen from the following 4 points. Number one, in the application of modern methods of political action, that is, fascist methods. Number two, in the opposition to the one-time Catholic or popular political parties. Number three, in the distrust of the lower clergy because of its too tolerant attitude towards pre-fascist ideas of individual rights and liberties, which we showed last week come from Freemasonry. Number four, in the creation of a movement of restoration, Catholic action, which was entirely dependent upon Vatican bureaucracy. And we'll get into this Catholic action in a minute here. Much of the mystery of Vatican relations with National Socialism can thus be solved. Persecution of the Catholic Church in Germany has been directed only against those elements which did not entirely submit to the ever-increasing centralization of authority in the Church and the state. To this end, the Vatican helped to crush out the Catholic popular parties, both in Italy and Germany, and centralized all political matters in Rome. This ensured to the dictators freedom from popular interference on the part of Catholics. It established a more complete dictatorial regime within the Catholic Church itself. It enabled the Vatican to enter into secret concordats with fascist countries already existing and with democratic countries like Spain, France, Belgium, and Portugal. after the destruction of their democratic governments by revolution and blitzkrieg. And finally, it left the way clear for complete harmony and unity between National Socialist Fascism and Jesuit Catholicism. So it's really answering a lot of questions that we've had here, really, Dennis, isn't it? About why they got rid of that Catholic Central Party when they were supposedly supporters of the Catholic Church. Well, they weren't. And another thing that I got from this book, looking into this early, Dennis, you know, the reason for that, mm-hmm. once democracy had set in after the French Revolution, and you had these various different political parties, the Catholic Church said, well, we're losing our influence. What we need to do is we need to set up political parties so that we can try and have a Christian influence on the politics. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. But what happened was the Catholics that became members of these political parties, they became influenced by democracy. Instead of the church having an influence on the democracy, the people in these parties became corrupted, like our politicians today. So that's what happened to this central party in Germany that they got rid of, basically. The Vatican dissolved it in exchange for this concordat with Hitler. And it wasn't just there either. It was also in Italy, Spain, France, all these other countries as well. The same thing happened.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, as I know, somebody was saying the other day that they're backtracking a bit now. You know, that part, what I did on the Pope and the book, Hitler's Pope, they're now trying to backtrack. But it sounded like they're backtracking from what I gathered, you know, because obviously they've inadvertently revealed something which I immediately saw and capitalised on. And obviously, like you just said then, not only in Germany was this happening, but it was happening in all the Axis countries as well.
And this has all been covered up as well. It's really not well known that the church entered into all these agreements. Well. Let's move on to Catholic Action. That he was talking about here, and this is the it's like a fascist organization, but it had existed for a long time before fascism. Catholic Action, the crusade for Catholic reform, has the following characteristics. Number one, its direction, as laid down in Pope Pius XI's encyclical Quadragesimo Anno, which we quoted from last week, is explicitly entrusted to the Society of Jesus, that's the Jesuits. Its aims are the extermination of the hated liberal spirit of the 19th century, the formation of a world crusade against socialism and communism, the success of the Counter-Reformation. Three, the means to obtain these ends are the annihilation of the old Catholic political parties, which became impregnated with the democratic ideology, and the purging of the secular clergy, as the humanistic progressive clergy, the religious orders and the laity, insofar as they persist in holding to non-traditional Catholic opinions in matters of ecclesiastical policy. Number four, the most suitable political regime to assure the success of this crusade for Catholic reconstruction is the hierarchical authoritarian form of the fascist state or of National Socialism. So having big problems with these liberal priests. I mean, we've said before, how was it that they were able to take over the Catholic Church and take over in South America? And obviously this has been going on for a long time, and This getting rid of the centralist party, getting rid of the liberal priests in Germany, this was part of the church's response to that. And they were using the political parties or the fascist states, they were using them to get rid of the liberal priests in the Catholic Church that were in those countries.
That's right.
So it wasn't just benefiting the Italy and Germany to get rid of these communists. It was also benefiting the Vatican to be doing so. And what I was going to say before, I think, was that the Pope was sending out these papal bulls saying that they condemn National Socialism, they condemn racism, all of this stuff, while at the same time they were backing them because they knew that they were cleaning up the church. So they were sort of saying one thing to the world because they knew that the Jewish newspapers would be reprinting it and,
you know, correct.
And at the same time, that their actions were saying different. So it's back to this, you know, you've got to look at what people are doing rather than what they're saying. Actions speak louder than words. Yeah.
Perfect example. But I also think this is all coming home to roost with me because what I was educated on was not this kind of the Western version of World War II. I was educated on the Balkan version of World War II. And I'm pretty sure that the European countries' populations knew what this war were about, but people outside, because of, you know, the restrictions on press and everything else, were totally unaware. And so you've got, in a way, you've got like two different faces of a war. And down in the Balkans, the Croatian, when Ustasha took over, they said, like you just said, that everything has to be just so, it doesn't work. So they said to Christian Orthodox, if you don't convert to being a Catholic, then you'd face deporting or death. Just like the English said to the Protestants, said to the English Catholics at a certain time in history, if you don't convert, you're going to die. Same thing. It's that ruthless streak of both of these entities.
Well, that's because they understood that diversity is not a strength. You know, that's what's at the heart of this.
And you're
bringing up the, you know, the British response to it, the Protestant response to it. It was the same as the Catholic response because, you know, they had common sense. They knew that you couldn't have two opposing ideologies within one country. You need to have everybody singing off the same hymn sheet. Otherwise, you're going to be divided and fighting against one another.
Well, even today in the UK, I've discussed this before, you know, there's no positions of power available to a Roman Catholic. It's just one of them things.
That's one of the relics of the past. But you imagine, I mean, they knew that it would be a serious problem to have people of the same ethnicity believing in different faiths. You imagine, you know, what a problem it is to have people of different races in the same country.
I mean, they
were prepared to kill people just for having a different ideology that were the same brothers, and yet we've got governments today that insist on bringing in other races that aren't brothers, aren't cousins, have completely, totally different cultural ideas and ideologies and religions, and they tell us that it's a strength. And it goes against all common sense, it goes against all history, everything that we know is that it's not a strength, it's a way to destroy a people. And this shows you it. I mean, the church was, especially the Catholic Church, I mean, they would not tolerate heresy, they would not tolerate other ideologies. And that's why it's got nothing to do with, oh, well, we should be, you know, we should let people work out their own way of doing things. It was for the good of the nation. It was putting the good of the nation first above the good of the individual. That's why they purged these heresies.
And exactly.
That's why this Catholic Church was getting rid of these traditionalists, because not traditionalists, rather the liberals and the progressives, because they knew that if they didn't, they would end up with
where
a
we
church
actually,
like today. Yeah. Exactly what we've got today.
Exactly.
And obviously one of the main people that was involved in this was Leon de Grel.
Yeah, don't forget, this is the guy that Hitler said, if he had a son, he would love him to be just like Leon de Grel, which is some statement you don't understand.
Wasn't it Obama that said something about one of those killers, Tyrone or something, if I had a son? That's just what he looked like.
Yeah, could be, yeah.
I forget the one that was shot, its name now, for the minute.
Yeah.
Right, well, let's get into Leon de Grel here. Nowhere has Catholic action shown itself more in line with National Socialism than in Belgium, where Leon de Grel's Rexist Party in 1940 came into its own. Pope Pius XI gave the Catholic slogan, Christus Rex, Christ the King, to Catholic action as the battle cry for its crusade for Catholic reconstruction of the social order. And that became the battle cry of the Rexist Party. And that's where the name, the Rexist Party, comes from. So it comes directly from this Catholic action.
Correct.
So, I mean, this is proving that these links are there. It's not just, you know, somebody seeing coincidences. We can now see why the abolition of the pre-Hitler Catholic political parties in Germany had the approval of the Movement for Catholic Reconstruction. Here is what Gonzague de Renold has to say on this point. The Centre Party, which Hitler fought with all his might, was forced to commit suicide. But it was a party which had already shown signs of deterioration, which had made many mistakes and upon which the young people were turning their backs. The news that soon they could take part in real Catholic action without any addition of party politics aroused great enthusiasm. And this was the other thing. They were separating the church from the state, basically, as well. They were saying that the state is responsible for politics and the church is responsible for spiritual instruction.
Yeah, education.
And just as you need a hierarchy with the state and you need somebody that's responsible at the top that takes responsibility for things, in the spiritual world, you need the same. You can't have people just making up their own doctrines. You've got to have something that decides what doctrine is, and you've got to have somebody at the top. So I can see a similarity between the Catholic Church and the Pope and with the National Socialism and Adolf Hitler. You've got hierarchy, which is the natural order of things. And I know I don't think the Pope should have said that he's infallible, but the idea of having somebody right at the top of the hierarchy, I mean, that is a solid ideal. That's the way things should be. And you've always had that.
Well, it's a natural way, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
In the jungle, you find that. You know, the lions and the top one will prevail.
Well, you always had the monarch that was, you know, that was in charge of the material things, and he was right at the top, and he declared the civil law. And then you need somebody right at the top of the religion that declares the spiritual law and the moral law and speaks up and says, look, you've got to treat the poor people well, speaks up for them. And then you've got the king that finally decides things. I mean, it does make sense. That's the way things are supposed to be.
We said last week about populations not being knowledgeable enough to decide on a leader. And they're not. They're swayed by, you know, TV adverts and propaganda, newspapers. They're easily swayed. I think the only time they worked were the Brexit vote. That caught them on the up. But other than that, I think all the other elections, like, you know, there's a bit of, the papers will get a bit of a momentum going for one of the parties and get behind the leader and the sheep follow. So I can totally understand where you're coming from. I really can.
Well, they're really against democracy. I mean, it's like having a load of children, load of five-year-olds in the back of the car, and then saying, well, because we've got a load of five-year-olds in the back of the car, they have to be in charge. You tell us where we're going. You direct us. And leaving it to the five-year-olds to decide everything instead of the parents.
Well, just so 50-year-olds think like five-year-olds, trust me.
Yeah. that's what's wrong with democracy. Because, I mean, they make it sound as if it's so sensible. And it's not. It's the most
practically. It's a nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the stupidest system you could have. Of
well, not for them, people. It isn't, because they'll just keep behind the curtain and put Obama in, then they'll put Bush in, and then they'll put Clinton in. So they're in all the time, but the general public only see the Bushes, Clintons, and Obamas, and thinks there's change.
Yeah, it doesn't change. The civil servants remain the same. It's just the puppets at the front that change. And we can see with Donald Trump that they're not actually capable of making any changes. They're just window dressing for a system. And if the system is corrupt right at the heart, you're not going to be able to change it. You have to have a different system. I think democracy has shown us that it's a failed system. It doesn't work.
Well, it's an excuse for war as well, because when they hype it up to what it's not, and then they say, we need to bring democracy to the Middle East, and everyone's nodding away.
Yeah, it's been used as an excuse for war
exactly.
So many times. Okay, for the very same reason, the Rex's party in Belgium, direct offspring of Catholic Action, likewise declared, all Catholic parties are the result of a fixed historical situation and have advantages and disadvantages for the Church. When these historical situations cease to exist, Catholic parties lose their reason for existence. This applies equally to the Catholic Party in Belgium. Up until now, differing opinions could be had as to their usefulness and their right to existence. Today, however, they are anachronisms, as were the Centre Party in Germany and the Popular Party in Italy. The Catholic Party did not understand the new historic mission. The confessional movement did not transform itself into a national movement. Because of these deficiencies, it had to disappear like all other parties. And I'll just stop there. He's saying because the Church did not transform itself into nationalists. It didn't move with the nationalist state. It needed to be dissolved, and something else needed to take its place. I mean, if you're not going with nationalism, then you're going against the natural order.
Correct.
I think that's at the heart of it. And if you've got a Christian organization that is not supportive of nationalism, then it's blasphemy, really. God created the nations.
Well, everything they do is anti-God, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, the peak of that one was the marriage of two men
in a church. Yeah. All the churches should be supporting nationalism. I think it's central to Christianity. Loving your neighbour, God created the nations. It even says in the Bible that you'll be in your nations in the afterlife. So what does that say about people that don't actually have an ethnic nation? Mixing the races is the most anti-Christian, anti-God thing that anybody could ever do. And yet the Church tolerates it nowadays because it's fallen that far.
Well, it's not the Church anymore, is it? In my eyes, it's the Catholic Church is gone. It's another entity in there now.
The Church is the true believers. The people that still understand it and keep to it.
Like me.
And me. And our listeners.
And you.
And our listeners. The Rex's party will now take up the defence of Catholic and ecclesiastical interests. It does not only intend to defend the Church, but also to take the whole religious question out of politics. It will effect this by means of the constitutional guarantee of the rights of the Catholic Church, and by drawing up a concordat to regulate the relations between the state and the Church. Thus, according to this new Catholic policy, there is to be no apparent separation between Catholic Action and the National Socialist thrust for the establishment of its new order in Europe. To the Rex's party was assigned the task of regulating the relations between the Catholic Church and the fascist state in Belgium by means of a concordat, as was done in Germany through von Papen and the present Pope Pius XII, then Papal Nuncio to Germany. This new historic mission of the Church of Rome, initiated by the Lateran Pact and the Concordat of 1929 between the Vatican and Fascist Italy, calls for collaboration with the National Socialist and Fascist dictators, unhampered by any questioning or interference from the people or the lower clergy. Liberal principles and popular freedoms have to be crushed out as completely in the Church as in the state. I mean, you can see these parallels between the two. You really can, and how important it was that they did this in the Church and got rid of these liberal ideas and progressivism.
I think if you put yourself in their shoes at that time, and remember that the Pope got banned from Versailles, they lost three Christian empires in World War I. They were in a desperate situation, and desperate situations means desperate measures. And obviously we can see all this now, but all this has been hidden away from outside Europe and probably outside inside Europe now. But at that time, Europe would have known what was going on. They would have, the people would have known. And when it was developing the SS for other countries to join in, that would have been the motivation as well. religious fanaticism, if you like, of the SS from Norway, from all different parts of Europe. And so when outside Moscow, you know, the SS are standing firm, they're losing man after man, but not backing up and eventually stopping that thrust of the communists at that time. That is why they were what they were, because of this devotion to country and to God.
Well, we'll look into the reasons for the Pope not being allowed into Versailles next week. There's a whole chapter on that we'll get into. Yeah. But it's like the Vatican was saying, or the National Socialists were saying, look, we don't want any trouble from these Catholics. And the Vatican was saying, well, we'll ensure you don't have any trouble from the Catholics. And you promise us that you will stamp out all this liberalism and all this humanitarianism and equality and egalitarianism and all the Freemasonic stuff. You stamp all that out and we'll promise you the support of all our Catholics. But while you're getting rid of all the Masonic influence, we'll also give you a list of the Masonic priests and the priests that are involved in pushing communism and that are helping communism out. So you can help us and we can help you, because we're both trying to do the same thing. We're both trying to restore the natural hierarchy of things and the natural law.
Yeah.
And this is the real traditional church, not this
the proper church,
egalitarian stuff that we see today, that the church gets criticized for.
Mm.
And you can see here, I mean, it's serious stuff. I mean, they're talking about, you know, some of these priests that were put in camps, you know, there was fights to the death. So, some of those Freemasons, you know, they were hanged for their crimes.
Yep.
And this was with the blessing of the church.
The thing is, I think he only toned down on things when America came into the war. I think he had to walk a delicate tightrope then, so he was saying things to appease the Americans. But I think Roosevelt sent a representative, and I'm pretty sure the Pope turned him away, from what I can remember.
He also got, you know, I mean, they'll say today, oh, you're supposed to love your enemies and the church isn't supposed to punish anyone. But, you know, here they are, they're supporting capital punishment. I mean, somebody's broken the law, and they, you know, they're subversive, then they have to pay the penalty. You know, there's none of this, oh, well, you know, we can't be too harsh on them. Who are we to judge? You know, the law is the law. Well, that's...
The funny thing is, the funny thing in England, where the Catholic Church has always been disregarded because of, obviously, since the Middle Ages, that people who were fighting against Germany and all the Axis countries were initially fighting the policies of Rome as well. But that would have been in their interest to support it, because the answer to all the questions is when you look around today.
Yeah, we can see the damage that it's done by losing the war and fighting on the wrong side. Well, that's it from these quotes, and we've got a few comments here from your last video as well that we weren't able to get to the other week. This one comes from Billy J. Risch. He says, have you found any evidence that captured Germans via Operation Paperclip were involved in developing MK Ultra for the CIA? I just listened to a compelling video by a medical doctor that realized that abortion was satanic, etc., and then she jumped off to Nazis and MK Ultra. I stopped viewing after that comment. So what do you know about, is there a link between MK Ultra and the National Socialists?
Well, I've always said, really, that it was just a plunder of scientists. The American scientists were 10 years behind it. They got these rockets, but they didn't know how to work them. So they needed these scientists from Germany, and they brought them over. And people say what they want about the Holocaust. You know, these people were given a different life, a new life, which at that time, the options they had, you know, who could blame them? But the MK Ultra thing, I believe, was going on before this anyway. Someone was talking about one of the guys heavily involved in the MK Ultra was also given access to Rudolf Hess. And this guy can really twist your mind up. You know, he can really, you know, do things to your mind that he'd learned about over the years. And he could well have done this to Rudolf Hess. But I think Rudolf Hess were different. It was a different person at Nuremberg, but a lot of the things that he said made a lot of sense as well, if you know what we're talking about. So this MK Ultra thing, I think, is not a inverted commas a Nazi thing. This was going on in the CIA before.
Yeah, I think Rudolf Hess said that he was drugged, didn't he? And truth drugs play a part in MK Ultra and yep. brainwashing and implanting memories. And I think there's a link with MK Ultra with Aleister Crowley.
So that won't surprise me at all. It's MI5, MI6.
Yeah, more so the National Socialism. But the National Socialists were involved with the rockets, obviously, and also giving their information to the Americans so that they could fight against the Soviets. Because they were so far in advance. The next one is from Israel Did 9/11. He says, I must say it was rather blackpilling to find out that even Andrew Jackson was a Freemason. Can we have no heroes but Jesus and Hitler? Well, I can think of Brutus, the Trojan Prince, the guy that the patriarch of the British race. I tell you, if you look back through the history of the Kings of Britain by Geoffrey Monmouth, you will find that that book is filled with British heroes and heroic behaviour, courageous behaviour. It's a fascinating book. I did a series of narrations on it, which you can look up. And just have a look through that if you want to have some heroes, some British heroes.
Yeah, just Churchill these days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's only in the last century that we've had these real horrible traitors. Before then, we had people that were willing to lay down their lives.
Yeah.
For their comrades, for their friends.
William Joyce as well, John Ayrton. Yeah. These people did the same.
Yeah, we've done. What about the Axis heroes that Messerschmitt talked about? We've done a whole series on heroes in the Axis nations that are worth checking out. So there are plenty of good people.
Obviously vilified, though, that's a problem to mainstream people. So you got to keep that aside.
Just look through nationalism and the last 70 years of nationalism to find some heroes. Okay, next comment from Adolf Hitler. He says, Dennis Wise, is it true that Hitler wished that Germany would become an Islamic nation?
this is another one of these twisted stories. He, obviously, the Palestinians declared all the war with Germany on the Jews. They came in at a later stage. So obviously, he was happy to have them on board. But to say it was changed his nation, I think it comes from a line somebody said he quoted once, but I don't believe he actually quoted that line.
I think he meant, they had an SS unit that were, that's right, were Islamic. That's because they were fighting against communism and atheistic communism. So all the religions of the world were against communism. So he had an SS unit, and I think he gave them a Quran with a swastika on it. And I think he had looked through the Quran. And I think he was impressed with the discipline of the soldiers, but he certainly wouldn't have wanted to see it transposed to Europe. It's not a European religion, but it was good for the Arabs. It's good for the Arabs, basically. So no, he didn't want to see Germany become an Islamic nation. James Thomas says, Ku Klux Klan, I'd have to see more on this in particular to understand it more. Why on earth any Mason could find common ground with groups like the Klan or the Nation of Islam is beyond me. So do you want to talk a little bit more about Freemasonry's link with the Ku Klux Klan, Dennis?
Yeah, well, somebody had a go at me saying that the KKK wasn't Masonic, but he did have Masonic roots with Pike. Pike talks about it quite a lot. They were funded again by the Protestant side of the Jews, so it makes sense to me. And they didn't like, said they didn't like Jews, but they said they didn't like Catholics neither, and blacks. But certainly with the Mexican Revolution as well, they offered to match even double what the Catholic fundraising would amount to. So, and that was the Masonic government in Mexico, what was taking out on religion. So it's not a surprise to me.
And I think, you know, what you're referring to there is the original Ku Klux Klan. I think there have been three different variations of it. And the first Ku Klux Klan, well, yeah, that was like racist Freemasons. I mean, they were totally against Catholicism.
Backed by bankers, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a, you know, it wasn't an alternative thing like there is today. It was, you know, lots and lots of people were involved in the Klan. It was a major thing. The same
true
as you got,
much, yeah.
Yeah, the same as you got all Freemasons in the top positions of society today. There was a time when all the people in the top positions were also members of the Klan. And I think you can you can look at the names that they have for their leaders, like Grand Wizard, and they have all these names that are very, very similar to Masonic names. And I think, you know, they would have taken the structure from that. I'm not so sure that it would have been, you know, it would have taken in the occult side from it, but in the way that it was like a secret society that members would join, that you can see that there's a lot of similarities to Freemasonry. Yeah. And the guys that started it were Freemasons, and that would have influenced it. So I think that's the connection. And the National Socialists knew it as well, because they put that Ku Klux Klan figure on the on that propaganda piece about the liberators, with this giant figure with bombs and all these all the American depravity in this propaganda picture, and this big creature's got a Ku Klux Klan hood on.
Well, I said in Grace Story Never Told that Hitler would not have joined. You know, they perceive Hitler as being like a Klan leader, if you like, but that's obviously the propaganda. He wouldn't have joined. Truman gladly joined and being a 33 degree Mason, I'm not surprised.
Well, he couldn't have joined because he was a Catholic. Well, we've got one.
Oh, yeah.
We've got one comment left, and this is from Luke M. He says, I don't know if I believe that documentary footage from the video Hitler's Britain, or whatever that footage is from. I don't believe Hitler actually executed Masonic leaders. It's a great leap if he didn't execute the Rothschilds. But still, I guess killing a bunch of demonic old men is better than ordering the deaths of 6 million men, women and children, like we have been led to believe. Now, this book that we're looking at here, this claims that he executed high-ranking Freemasons.
Large leaders, yeah.
If you think about it, if they were charged with being traitors and causing the deaths of thousands of people, or for profiting from war, I think that's probably more likely what they were charged with, and they just happened to be Freemasons, rather than, well, we're just going to kill you because you're a Freemason. I think they would have had to have broken some serious laws, because they did say that war profiteers, they were going to be executed.
Well, yeah, but I also think because he didn't kill all Freemasons, it was just the leading ones that they thought were obviously delving into the occult and obviously subversion, working for the Jews.
It's something that we'll have to look into.
Yeah.
Because, it is plausible that he did do that. And again, it's also plausible that he didn't. It could just be propaganda. So, yes, it is something that we need to research a little bit more, I think, Dennis. All right, well, that's brought us to the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
Do.